Hey, listeners, I couldn't be more excited to bring you this episode of the History Factory podcast. In it, I had the opportunity to interview a friend and colleague of mine, Anders, all the way in Stockholm, Sweden, where I took a break from a family vacation to head to the Center for Business History and really got into a deep discussion with Anders about the value of using brand and company history as a strategic asset. So I hope you enjoy this interview and chat as much as I did. And let's get to it. Anders, thanks for being with me today. How are you?
Good. Thanks for coming out here to Stockholm.
All the way to Stockholm. Yes, it's so exciting to be here. What an incredible facility you have. So many incredible stories of different business archives. But today, I thought we could get the conversation started by talking about what inspired you to get into history or heritage marketing.
So on a that's a two-leveled question. So both on a personal level, but then also as an organization, what brought us in here? I'll start with me. So I was brought up actually in a movie family. So storytelling is close to heart. I then tried to revolt against that. So I did an economics education, but ended up writing cases for Harvard Business School for a while. So again, storytelling, but on fact-based storytelling. So once I learned about the Center for Business History here in Stockholm after living abroad for a couple of years, I figured this is the place where I want to be. They do have the archives. They do have the sources and the actual facts of what happened. And then you can add storytelling to that and tell the riveting drama that took place whenever it took place and with whatever company it happened with. So it just felt a natural fit. So now I've been here for close to 9 years.
Wow. Very cool. And the organization?
Yeah. So the organization, which happens to turn 50, we both work, History Factory and Center for Business History, we both work a lot with anniversaries.
Yes.
Now we have our own.
Nice.
So we had to figure out, do we have an archive of our own? We actually didn't. So now we do.
No.
We built our own archive and we figured we need to do an anniversary for ourselves, celebrating in part our own history, but celebrating also the history of all the people and the companies who have used our services over the years. So we're actually using this as an opportunity to tell the business story of Sweden for the past 50 years. Mm-hmm. But 50 years ago, we were founded very much as a local idea for Stockholm. So Stockholm, the capital of Sweden, we have a lot of big companies here. In the 1970s, we also had a lot of companies that no longer existed, that had gone defunct or for some reason or another disappeared, but had left physical remnants in the city. Material some places, objects some places, but Stockholm in the 1970s was also a city in transformation. Things were being torn down and replaced. People were moving from the inner city to the suburbs, which were being built at the time. So a lot of physical artifacts and physical memories were being destroyed almost, or ran the risk of being destroyed. So we were founded to take care of dead Stockholm companies that no longer existed. The city of Stockholm on the public side and the Stockholm Chamber of Commerce on the private side, they banded together, found money and started us. Over time, though, living companies started realizing that, hey, here's an archive institution, a heritage institution that can take care of historical material. Mm. So throughout the 80s and 90s, a lot of big Swedish companies, big in Sweden, but also some of them big names internationally like Electrolux, Ericsson, H&M, companies like that started turning to us to say, hey, can you store our stuff for us? And that was our big growth phase. Mm. And from storing things here, companies started coming to us and say, hey, you have our historical material. Our CEO is giving a speech next week. Can you help find some good, fun things from the past? that sort of very anecdotal start. But from requests like that grew a whole storytelling part. Mm. So over the past 20 years or so, the storytelling, the narration, the research part has grown. Sometimes we do internal work for companies. There will be a CEO. We will not name names, but a CEO yeah. will call and say, hey, how come we own this subsidiary? It was bought 3 CEOs ago. They were smart people at the time. They probably knew what they were doing, but I can't figure out why. So we will do research into the protocols and whatever documentation we have from that time and come back with a report saying this is how they reasoned. And then they can go on and decide whatever they want to do with that subsidiary today. Mm-hmm. But we give them the historical background. And other times they will just come to us when there's anniversary time.
Yeah.
And you'll recognize this.
Yeah. The calendar gift from the gods.
Exactly.
Right? An anniversary.
Use any anniversary you can.
Yes, exactly.
The company's founding year.
Yeah.
Or a brand's founding year. Mm-hmm. Or 50 years since you moved to this location or whatever.
Or the innovation of X.
Exactly. Never waste a good anniversary.
That's very true. Mm-hmm. Very true. So that is something you all do here. And you help with the storytelling, preservation, and use of history, right?
Very, very much so. So we're very much in the same arena as History Factory.
Yeah.
But our focus is on Swedish companies. But just like you, I mean, we try to get the storytelling, not the historical storytelling, not just to be history for history's sake, but yeah. actually be linked to whatever the companies are doing today.
Yeah. Start with the future and work back. Right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Find the roots, threads that actually speak to what you're doing today.
Yeah.
And disregard the other ones because you'll never have time to tell the full history anyway with whatever limited time that you have.
Yeah. So the book that just came out, Using History as a Corporate Strategic Asset, History Marketing, can you tell us a little bit about the idea behind creating this book?
So in a way, it's a summary of our past 50 years, what we believe we've learned when it comes to fact-based, effective, business-driven heritage storytelling. Mm. We call it history marketing and not heritage marketing, but it's very similar. It's the same.
Yeah.
We call it history marketing for a couple of reasons. One is that we actually inherited the term from a German researcher. So in the way we came to that arena is we learned how Germany after reunification in the 90s, when East Germany opened up and the archives on the eastern side of Germany all of a sudden became available, it became clear to German companies what they had done during the war.
Mm.
So the 90s, and just after the early noughts, were in Germany, were a big part of German researchers being invited in to do research, open research, invited by the companies themselves. As a way to, okay, let's acknowledge what we did. Let's come clean with our past so we can move forward.
Mm.
The type of journey that Russia, by the way, never did.
Mm.
And look where we are. But Germany actually cleaned up
yeah.
and acknowledged. And in the process of going through their archives, they also found all the good stuff they did. And they could balance the good with the bad. They could figure out what actually came out of what.
Mm.
And a German scholar started calling this history marketing.
Nice.
So we took that term to heart. Could have just as well been that somebody else had with us had heard the term heritage marketing, and we could have started calling it that.
Yeah,
heritage is a hard word to translate into Swedish, though, for various reasons. So history marketing it became.
Nice.
And so this book is summarizing what we think we've learned over the past years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also a sales tool, of course. It's a reminder to companies that, of course, you should keep archives for the greater good, mm-hmm. for the public benefit of knowing where we as a society have come from.
Yeah.
But you also have to find budget reasons every year within the company to keep paying for that archive, to keep paying for that heritage research. And one reason to do it is that you can use your history as a strategic asset.
Yeah.
And that's what the book is all about, why you should use it an argument to be used in budget times.
Yep. Why do you think history marketing works? Or doesn't work?
Exactly. I was going to say, that's a nice assumption. Let's assume that it works. I think when it works, it lends credibility to whatever the company at hand has to say today. Mm-hmm. So history or your heritage is your best proof point of what you're promising today. Mm. We are all living in times of transformations, especially right now with the transformation to a greener economy, circular economy. If we want to leave the world behind for the next generations, we have to transform societies and as companies. That's a challenge no previous generation has had. Mm-hmm. But previous generations have had other challenges, going from agricultural to industrial, going from a pretty horrendous world of industrial living into a more
humane.
Yeah. So all those steps, every generation has had its transformation. So let's learn from previous transformations, and let's bring that to life with actual factual stories. So history as a proof point for what you're promising today. Then also history is authentic. It actually happened.
Yeah, it's real.
We all, as storytellers, we're looking for authentic stories.
Yeah.
That are not just made up. So authentic, and if we're talking about right now, I guess content marketing is still a fashion trend. Whatever term will replace it will contain elements of it. Actually using things that happened to tell stories and not just made up.
That's great. How have you counseled leaders at different companies?
Ooh, big. Well, we should probably have a separate session on this and compare notes.
Yeah, right.
But you counsel them a little differently depending on what type of company it is. Mm-hmm. Family-owned companies come with their own dynamics.
Very true.
First, second, third, fourth, five, fifth generation. Mm-hmm. Companies that are more held by anonymous money, if you will, come with their own set of dynamics. And you need to counsel them a little bit differently. In family companies, you have to help them to separate almost the family story from the corporate story, if that's possible. But help them at least to balance that storytelling so it doesn't become a who married who story. But rather, why did we launch this thing? What was it needed for? Mm-hmm. What did the world look like then? Mm-hmm. How could we help the world better and advance? More larger companies with more anonymous owners, you have to figure out, okay, so what did this company inherit from previous generations of company servants?
Yeah.
And what can we bring with them into that? What is the actual ethos or DNA of a company that's been around forever, but the founders are long gone? Mm-hmm. What happens there? And to help them find that. So you have to counsel them a little bit differently. But then I'm sure you also come across companies who are afraid of what's in their past.
Very true. There's always a company that is trepidatious about what could be found. But I've always found that, and I'm sure you'd agree, it's better to reflect and to understand your company's history, because it didn't just happen yesterday. Yeah. It's existed. So better to own your own story before someone owns it for you.
And see what you can learn from it so you never repeat the mistake.
Yeah.
Or at least understand the previous generations for what they did. They probably weren't bad people, but they did things that we today might think of as bad.
Yeah. There's a possibility for reconciliation with the past, for sure.
As a way to move forward. Again, the German example of coming clean.
Yeah.
Really understanding your past so you can move forward. Mm-hmm. And then also, I mean, a lot of times the skeletons in that closet, there aren't that many of them.
No.
And if they see the day of light, they vanish like the trolls in the fairy tales.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting is companies are run by humans.
Yeah.
And I've not yet met a perfect human.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a fact that they'll have made mistakes in the past.
Plus, storytelling-wise, if we put on that cap, who believes a story that just goes from success to success to success?
Yeah.
Nobody believes it. Plus, it's a pretty boring story.
Yeah.
So you need to give the nuanced
approach.
Yeah.
Yep. I agree. So what are some common misconceptions on using history as a corporate asset?
The most common one that we come across, I think, is that, history, it's fun for academics. But at this company, you know, we're all about the future. As if the future and the past were two separate things.
Yeah.
I mean, we're here preaching, you and I, that history is something that can be used.
Yeah,
To give energy, to move forward, to boost whatever you're doing right now. But I think that's the most common misconception. That's the first, talking about educating our clients or helping them understand. That's the first misconception we have to take out of them.
Yeah, that's very true. I don't think I've ever worked or we've ever worked with clients who've said, we're all about the past. Yeah. Every single company we work with, have the pleasure to service, is all about the future. And sometimes they can have concerns about utilizing the past and not making it seem outdated. Yeah. Or the sepia tone photographs, or the things that only are looking back. But I like to think of it as where memory meets imagination to help fuel that future.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And just like you said, they're afraid a little bit. Even if they agree, okay, history is probably useful, they're still afraid of being too historical.
Yeah.
As if that would hold them back. So it's a long journey sometimes to help them realize that use history. Use it effectively and not all the time, but use it where you can to prove whatever you're promising to do.
Yeah. I've found that history and the stories and those threads that you talked about, the rich points in a company's past, can be very helpful in reinforcing culture.
Yep.
Reinforcing the idea that we all belong to something bigger and better than ourselves, individual contributors, and that history can do it in a very effective way.
And I have an example of that early on in the book. So Clas Ohlson is a Swedish retailer that started out not dissimilar from Sears and Roebuck with a mail order company. They are still around 100 plus years later. They use mail order for forever. And then they turn into physical stores in the 80s, and everybody thought that was a revolution internally at Clas Ohlson, because we've always been mail order. Now we're all about stores, and founder Clas, he's only been dead for a couple of years. He's probably spinning in his grave. But they, at the time, said, no, Clas was all about helping people fix their everyday problems by making sure they had the appropriate tools and gadgets and solutions. The way to do it now is have stores. So they build up retail stores. And now they're, just like any retailer, they are moving from brick and mortar into e-tailing, digital sales.
Direct to consumer.
And all of a sudden they're closing stores. And the people working at Clas Ohlson today is like, oh, it's a revolution. We're breaking with our heritage. But no, again, you're carrying on the same heritage as the founder.
Yeah.
Once laid down, you're helping people solve everyday problems. And for every period of time, we have to figure out what's the best way to do it.
Yeah.
The old, what would our founder have done? What would Clas do today?
that's a great example. It's very true. In essence, they are delivering upon that promise today and into the future. How do you think companies are getting it right? Like getting the use of history right?
The ones who do, I think they make the connection between then and now in the best way. And my favorite example of late is KLM, the Dutch airline, which turned 100, unfortunately, in 2020 when the pandemic hit and all the planes were grounded. But their centennial campaign was all about pictures from the past juxtaposed with pictures from today. And they have one cockpit picture where the left side of that picture is a pilot, probably 1920s, 1930s. And on the right side is a pilot from today. The pilot on the left is a man, the pilot on the right is a woman. Mm. So that's both continuity. We've been flying people for 100 years, but also development.
Yeah.
Because she was not allowed to fly 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. No, she does. And if you're a an airplane nerd. You can also get really deep into the
gadgets
and the panels and the instruments.
Yeah, that's a great example. Where do you think companies can improve on their use of heritage and history in marketing and storytelling?
Storing it quicker.
Sooner.
I mean, we probably share this experience a lot of times. Oh, we have a jubilee, an anniversary. Good, great, we'll help you with that. But we don't have any material saved. So you have to start by reconstructing their past for them. So start saving quicker than you think.
Yeah, I think that's a great suggestion, especially for younger companies. That's where you sometimes can tap into the founder's mindset.
Yeah.
And
because they're still around.
Yep. They are still around. And now more than ever, innovation happens quicker, right? Change is, transformation is constantly happening. And it's time now, right?
And we keep talking about the Spotify situation. So Spotify, a Swedish company that we all listen to music via, is turning probably 25 soon. We don't know if they have saved stuff yet. But the founders are still around. They are also an example of a company that's all digital. So how do we save digital assets that are of historical relevance? We love correspondence from the past. Do we save every email? We love project plans from the past. Do we get every PowerPoint deck? So the digital world comes with its own set of
challenges. Yeah. That is very true.
But we still want to save the same sort of information. How they came up with the things they came up with, how they decided which road to take, etc.
And what incredible marketing they do on the end of the year wraps.
That we all get. Yeah.
Right. But that in itself, they understand the kind of the memory aspect of music listening or podcast listening. And they themselves should hopefully, fingers crossed.
Yeah, so we're hoping, and people I've talked to there, they say they have an archive, they have an e-archive. We haven't gone further in discussions and not to dwell on them, but there are other born digital companies where some of the other ones call an archive is their Dropbox or their SharePoint.
Yes, I've heard that before.
Which is just somebody else's service.
Yeah.
And what's to say that in 100 years, those companies will be around?
Yeah. Or the file formats.
The file formats.
Won't be readable.
So the digital world comes with a lot of opportunities because it's easier to save, but a lot of different challenges.
Yeah. Could you provide a few examples of how companies can utilize their history to drive towards business goals?
I think the way we think about it is in a three-pronged approach. So either you use your history to build your brand, an external approach. If you're a B2C company, you can have heritage collections if you're in fashion or if similar things like that. Or you can build on previous ads and play with them when you do new ads. Mm-hmm. Sort of a pure brand building. If you're a B2B company, a lot of the industrial suppliers to auto industry use their history. We've been supplying you with security solutions for 100 plus years. Remember our first project together. So as a way to remind partners in the B2B world why they're doing business together. That's the first approach, sort of the external one. The internal one, of course, is coworkers and HR.
The culture.
There's a saying, at least in Swedish, that, you have to work here for a while because the culture is in the walls. That's a pretty stupid place to keep it.
It should live.
Bring it out. Yeah. Use it. Keep it alive.
Yeah.
So as a way to keep coworkers inspired, hopefully, and at least knowledgeable about where they work and why that company, what that company is all about, keep that history alive. And the third reason, or the third benefit of using history is risk minimization and change management. The Klaus Olsson example is about change management. Keep history alive just to understand why we're going through this change. Risk management is a lot about IP.
Yeah, that intellectual property is very important.
Why do we really own this brand? Yeah. When did we start using this logo?
Yeah.
Somebody else is claiming they were before us. Can we prove it?
Yeah.
So all those reasons.
It's great. Do you see a difference among companies leveraging history depending on where they're located geographically?
Ooh, interesting. Maybe not as much as if they have spread out from wherever they happen to be originally. Global companies will care more about their heritage because they have more of a brand to defend internationally.
Yeah.
Then I think, I can just speak for Sweden, most of the big companies have their headquarters either in Stockholm or in Gothenburg.
Mm-hmm.
So the big urban area, in Malmö to a certain degree, so the three big areas will probably care more because they talk about it amongst themselves.
It's a regional significance.
Yeah. And then the exception to that are places where the company is so important that whatever city or region would die without it.
Mm.
They care about their origins and they care about the fact that this company has been here forever. Mining industry, you have a fair amount of cities and companies like that. The forestry industry as well.
Yeah. So the reasons that cities sometimes exist.
Right? Or at least survived.
And whole economies built around
that
industry kind of as a result.
So they have a more natural inclination to talk about their history.
Mm-hmm.
We've been doing this forever and we should keep doing it together forever.
Yeah, that continuity. Yeah. And what is the future of history marketing for companies, do you think?
Hopefully it's more digital assets available so they can use it more on the fly.
Yeah.
That's what we're hoping, at least. We both run big projects with companies, normally around their anniversaries. But what if there were easier ways for that company to tap into its past? I think as helpers and consultants in the heritage marketing or history marketing sphere, that should probably be our next challenge, to make it even more accessible to them, to the companies.
Yeah, yeah. I see that happening as well. I think that, and it is something amazing when you make a collection accessible digitally, right, to a broader user group, right? It's the democratization of knowledge.
Yeah. Exactly.
The idea that they too can utilize it for their day-to-day work.
Right.
And it can provide inspiration, confirmation, right, to why they're doing the things that they're doing today or what could be possible in the future. Yeah.
And for that to work, we all have to create more digital solutions for them probably so they can access it on whatever device they happen. But I also think there's a mindset going back to helping companies understand why they can use their history and not be afraid of it. So sometimes with companies, we come across legal arguments why history shouldn't even be kept.
Yes. Records retention policies
and things like that. And if you want to use your history, it's damn shame if you actually got rid of it.
Yeah.
So let's help companies understand they don't have to be afraid of what they did before. That I think is nothing new. That's just ongoing.
Yeah.
The more we can help them there, the better.
Okay. Anything else in closing? Anything you want to share? Anything we didn't cover?
I don't think that. I just think it's fun that there are at least a couple of us out there, History Factory, Center for Business History.
Yeah.
In various parts of the world where we at least taken on this job, self-appointed job, but we've taken on the job of helping companies understand that they need to stake their part in history.
Yeah, never not learning.
Yeah.
That's what I say.
That's a very good point.
Never not learning. And there's something magic. There's alchemy in utilizing archives to do storytelling. And I think any company that we really have the pleasure of working with to be a steward of their story or represent their story in a way that is new and different and aligns to their values and their purpose and the mission of an organization. It is magic.
It is magic. It's that magical feeling you get when you actually get a company to come and visit their archive.
Oh, yeah.
So that's the next book we should write probably together.
Yeah.
The Archive Effect.
Yeah, that's it. Well, thank you so much for your time today and also showing me around this incredible facility. I have to just... For the listeners out there, you would be amazed at what is held here and the storytelling and the objects that they have here in Sweden. It's been incredible. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on the pod.
And please come visit us in DC.
We will.
Come see the archives.
We'll take the entire group.
Archives Lab. That would be so much fun. All right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Another big thank you to Anders for sitting down and making that just such an enjoyable and fruitful conversation about utilizing history as a corporate strategic asset. Until next time, thank you.